to another episode of Decoded, a podcast by Marriott Digital Services, bringing together the smartest mind, the best leaders in the digital space to produce a 10-part series on all things digital marketing. This week, we have a really special episode for you. We're meeting with Adam Sachs. He's the president and founder of Tourism Economics, and they're an Oxford economics company dedicated to understanding the relationship between travel and also the economy. And for over two decades, Adam has been working with many destinations, industry associations, and companies from around the world in many, many different areas to identify the opportunity, the risk assessment, the policy analysis, and also the economic impact of travel. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm well, Chris. How are you? Beautiful Good. Day here.
It is, absolutely. And are you excited for this conversation that we're going to have with Adam?
I am. I mean, I've personally seen the guy present a couple of times now, and I'm really excited to learn more about how everything that's rolling out with vaccine distribution has an impact on travel recovery, what that cycle looks like, and how everything's going to evolve the next couple of months as a result of the pandemic. Some of the data he's got is just marvelous. We've had the opportunity to see him speak a couple of times. So I'm really excited to kind of get a little bit deeper into that and hear someone interpret data in a way that, you know, only his background, tenure, and expertise lends to. So you don't get much better than talking to an economist about travel and hospitality and the comeback from a pandemic. So I'm really excited.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen him present a couple of times, and I'm really surprised, and you know, it's interesting to see how he's able to pull multiple different data points together and really relate it to the situation that is at hand. And you know, I think there's lots of cool stats which are going to come out of this conversation, so why don't we just get to it and have this conversation with Adam. Hi Adam, how are you?
Very good. Thanks, Christopher.
Great. Well, thanks, Adam, so much for joining the podcast today. And it's really good to have you with us. Before we jump into the meat of today's conversation, can you maybe give a quick overview of tourism economics and maybe your role there?
Yeah, sure thing. So Tourism Economics is a specialized firm within Oxford Economics. Oxford is based in Oxford, England, but with offices around the world. And what Oxford does is forecast and monitor the economies of the world. What my team does within that is connects what's going on in the economy to what's going on in travel. And so we look closely at the relationships between the economy and travel. That helps us provide guidance to our clients on the direction of travel, the risks to their markets, investment and marketing decisions, and even policy decisions in terms of advocacy with government agencies.
And you're really in tune with, you know, the recovery process for the global travel industry. So can you maybe give us your take on where we are in the recovery curve, where we are today? So that's March 2021.
Well, I think that, you know, it can be helpful to try to find analogies when we're talking about data, and sports analogies usually work. So, you know, if we're talking about American football, we're in the red zone and very close to taking this across the goal line. If we're in soccer or football in Europe, say we're in the box and you know, hopefully we're able to convert. So we're certainly, and let me just give one more. We are rounding third to go with baseball. It's hard to imagine actually a scenario where we go significantly backwards from here. You know, we've certainly had fits and starts along the way, but given the progress of vaccines, and particularly focused on, let's say, the US and the UK as two key markets, it's, you know, even though it's, you know, we're experiencing a plateau and in some places an increase in cases, the progress of the vaccine is such that it's very unlikely that we get to the place of an acute health crisis where we were during the winter or even, you know, last year. And so that does kind of stack everything in the favor of a recovery, even if it's halting at times. It seems like everything is staged for us to continue to move forward over the next 6 months as we see things materialize.
As you look at the world economy and travel particularly, is there any countries or regions that particularly stand out that may be further along the recovery cycle, or maybe ones which are not quite as far along, even starting to recover?
Right. Well, I mean, I think it's noteworthy that where all this started in China is experiencing the strongest performance in the hospitality industry. And, you know, whether it's because just as a function of time, they've gotten through it quicker, or because of the way they've dealt with it, or a combination of those things. If you look at hotel performance in China, it has led the recovery. And then the U.S. really follows as far as major markets. And the last month of performance in the U.S. has really surprised on the upside in terms of how leisure travel in particular has materialized. And I think it's a harbinger of what we're going to see this summer more broadly. Even in Europe, which of course is in a more serious position as far as restrictions and COVID-19 as well, the trajectory of the external environment and what's likely to be an opening up, I think, you know, sees Europe following the U.S. as far as the pace of recovery.
As you talked about all the different factors and levers that are going into the recovery, can you talk a little bit about administering vaccines and how that's impacted travel? Some folks might draw some very obvious conclusions, but can you tell us a little bit about what you're observing?
I mean, I think there are a couple of really important data points in regards to vaccinations and how it connects to travel. The first is that in the U.S. now, 71% of everyone aged 65 and up has received at least one shot of the vaccine. And that's critical because 81% of all deaths from COVID-19 in the U.S. are within that population of those aged 65 and up. So just by vaccinating that demographic, and we're already at 70% first shot, so well on our way within a month, if everyone follows the schedule of getting, you know, roughly three quarters of that key demographic vaccinated. Well, that really changes the whole weight of the health crisis. If you've effectively reduced deaths by, if you do the math, it winds up to be about 2/3 just on that demographic. That's really, really encouraging. And it's over a third of all adults in the U.S. have received at least one shot of the vaccine. So that really does, if you factor in warmer weather, those percentages of vaccination, and of course infection-based immunity, which, you know, the various estimates, you know, anywhere between, you know, 20-30% of the U.S. population, as you know, different studies have indicated. You really get to a place where this summer looks totally different than anything we've seen to this point. The other thing that the other data point that I think is really critical is that travelers are taking the vaccine at a higher rate than non-travelers. And it does map with education. It also maps with income. Both of those things favor more frequent, higher spending travelers. And so within those demographics, we're seeing even higher uptake and shall we say, less vaccine hesitancy. And so I think it really does favor the recovery as a direct function of vaccine. In fact, we've been doing a correlation analysis every month between the percentage of U.S. households that say they have a trip planned in the next 6 months, which, by the way, is now at 87%, which is phenomenal. And the percentage of adults that have received at least one shot of the vaccine, the correlation is over 90%. That is, the movement in one explains 90% of the movement in the other. So there probably isn't a more important driving force in this improvement in traveler sentiment than vaccinations. So even those that haven't yet received a vaccine, there's a sense of optimism, and it's translating into travel planning.
I mean, I can validate a good chunk of that myself. Like, I hadn't seen my parents in their 70s since, I think, September of last year. They got their first shot there, and they have both shots there in that demo, and they were finally comfortable flying again. So hits that very, very squarely in the reality you're painting. So you've talked a little bit about how that obviously folks need to get from point A to B. We've seen major decreases in air travel, and we're getting to see things kind of pop back up. But are there any particular segments of travel that you're seeing emerge at different rates? I'm sure drive probably had little impact through all of this, unless you were, you know, going out of state. Folks that are in, you know, respectively could get hit harder than others. But are you seeing any travel segments that are kind of swinging back that either surprise you or kind of map to your data?
Yeah, I mean, I can even go back to last summer. We have clients that, you know, we're kind of embarrassed to talk about how good a summer they had, and it was because they checked three boxes. The three boxes are leisure destination, outdoor, and drive market. If you could check those three boxes, you had a pretty darn good summer in 2020 in the US at your age. Because that's
spot.
All anyone was doing. That's all anyone was doing. And it was actually, you know, while fewer people were traveling, it was to a more finite group of destinations. And so there were destinations that well outperformed the market: resort, mountain, state park, national park sorts of destinations. So those are the three boxes that if you can check those, you're in great position. So the groups that I've worked with over the past year that have been in that position of just, you know, really outperforming the market, I've really fallen into those, you know, outdoor, distanced, within drive markets, primarily leisure. Of course, there's a flip side to that, right? And for every one of those destinations, there are huge major markets that can't check any of those boxes. And so the major urban markets, you know, the top 25 markets in the US have really taken it on the chin over the last year. And it's because, well, they have a significant group and corporate market. They're also a significant fly and international inbound markets. And they're, you know, the significant indoor recreation entertainment attractions. So those things have made performance among the top urban markets significantly lag secondary and tertiary markets.
So if you dive into those markets a little bit more, right, it's folks are moving, you know, out of their homes, they got to stay somewhere. Let's talk about hotels for just a second, right? You talked about outdoor, drive-by, national parks are booming, all that type of stuff. There's largely a certain type of hotel that you can associate with those types of destinations. But if you broadly spread that across, are there any types of trends you're seeing with hotel types? So like upscale, luxury, you know, the motel type, economy scale, that surprised you in any of this?
I mean, I suppose the nice thing from an analytical standpoint is there's incredible consistency when we look at it from different vantage points. So the hotels that have perform better tend to be, you know, rural, interstate, suburban resort, and they tend to be smaller. We go to large and big box, which also tends to, you know, connect to urban markets and group and corporate. They've underperformed. The other interesting dynamic, and you may be headed here anyway, but I think it connects to this question, is the relationship between hotel performance and short-term rentals. And during the summer of 2020 and through the fall of 2020, short-term rentals really outperformed the hotel industry. But over the last 3 months, performance has converged. And hotels have made a real comeback, while actually short-term rentals have begun, their occupancy rates have begun to decline. And so it's almost like a right sizing of demand. And there was a lot of talk while that was happening in 2020 as, okay, is this a permanent shift away from hotels towards short-term lodging, because short-term lodging gives you the benefits of social distancing, presumably. Well, I think the verdict is and the answer is that was a temporary phenomenon. And hotels have actually regained their performance-based place relative to short-term lodging.
If you were to isolate that, right, because that's a fascinating trend, because if I even map my own experience to that, right, like we did a couple house rentals in the fall, and then now we're kind of moving back into what was old habits. Are there any other times that you've seen where, like, or seasonality where, like, rental markets outperform hotels? If you were to, like, move COVID, like, out, let's say it's like we're back to 2019, is there any period of time where they particularly pop?
in general?
Well, it does tend to be seasonal with the leisure market, right? So whereas group and corporate peaks in October of each year, leisure peaks in the summer months. And so you do see that difference in seasonality between short-term rentals and the hotel industry just by exposure to those markets. But it's really been, it's been interesting to watch month by month over the last 3 months as hotels have continued to incrementally gain more occupancy while short-term lodging has been declining in occupancy. And there's a philosophical level to this where I've been doing this for 25 years. And it feels like, I don't know, at least every 7 or 8 years there's kind of this groupthink around new normals and, huge shifts in the way that travelers think or behave. And I've learned to be really, really slow to adopt any of that thinking because those predictions have not typically aged well. We saw them after the great financial crisis. People said, people aren't going to meet again in the same way. Meetings, we realized they're not necessary. And there was a lot of antipathy about meetings because of corporate bailouts, yet companies still doing incentive meetings. And, that got some bad press. And of course, in the wake of the great financial crisis, companies were performing quite badly or very cash poor, and they were cutting back significantly on participation in all sorts of meetings and events. But it was also the period of time in 2009, 2010, when really had the advent of virtual meeting technology being widely adopted. Not as good as it is now, but it's just as irritating as it is now. But anyway, everyone was jumping on this train of, we're not gonna need to meet anymore. And it's one of those Mark Twain moments, the reports of the death of travel highly exaggerated. And so here we are again, and we've got Bill Gates saying that business travel is gonna level off permanently to 50% of its prior levels. I'm just very slow to adopt any sense there's been a permanent shift. These things can change gradually over time, but I am a firm believer in the underlying motivations to travel for all of the purposes that hotels serve as being fundamental to human prospering and human flourishing. And whether it be for business or for leisure, those motivations have prevailed through every single crisis that we've observed. And these aren't just the ones in my lifetime or my experience. We've analyzed over 60 of them globally. And every single time the real surprise, if there is a surprise, is how quickly travel comes back. After SARS, travel was fully back in Asia within a little over a year. And no one would have thought that during SARS. SARS was frightening. 10% mortality rate. Nobody was traveling. It felt like its own sort of Armageddon, if you remember, people wearing masks and pictures of it. I think especially we in the West thought, what is going on? In a year, everything back. So I have a fundamental and philosophically based optimism as far as where we end up on the other side of this.
Can you maybe talk through the relationship between, the US unemployment rate as it stands today? And, if you look back to sort of April, the numbers were a lot scarier at April of 2020. And maybe also the level of household income and how that impacts how travel is going to return.
Absolutely. There's a lot to unpack there. I'll give you a spoiler alert to where I'm going to go with this before I unpack the data, which is that there's an incredible amount of pent-up demand for travel. Okay, let me back up and explain why. First, I'll share the bad news. While the unemployment rate is at now 6.2%, and that's around what you'd see in a U.S. recession, if you had held the labor force participation rate constant, the unemployment rate would actually be 9.4%. So it's actually much worse than headline unemployment rate. So why are we still optimistic? Well, a few reasons. One is that if you look at where those job losses are concentrated, they're vastly concentrated among lower income households who are not primarily travelers and those that are customers for hotels. In fact, if you look at population in the U.S. with a college degree, the unemployment rate is only 3.8%. So those job losses have largely spared customers of hotels. The other reality that I think really points to pent-up demand is that those households have saved roughly $1.7 trillion over the last year. There is just this war chest of savings that these higher income households, and by higher income in this case, what I'm referring to is anyone over that 60% threshold. So it's not the one percenters, it's the 40 percenters actually. They've saved $1.7 trillion. And why they've been saving it is because they can't spend it on travel. If you look at consumption over the last year, consumption on like durable goods and semi-durable goods have fully recovered, but services remains significantly suppressed. So if you look at, well, what have they not been spending the money on and why are they saving? It's because they haven't been traveling. And so it leads to this conclusion of phenomenal levels of pent-up demand among these households. And all they need is the all clear. And that gets us back to the conversation about where we think vaccines leave us, where they bring us as we get into the summer.
That 1.7 trillion that you just mentioned, is that an all-time high for savings? Because it's out to me when I read that in your report, when you look at unemployment numbers and everything else that's going on in the economy, and then another slide says savings are an all-time high. Like, it doesn't really relate, but now you explain it kind of, they haven't got the money, they haven't got the things to spend their money on. But is that a record for the amount of savings?
Yeah, it is. It is a record. Yeah. It's caution too. I think we are all a little bit, at one level of terrified or another when this broke last year. I think we've all sort of also moved in the place of, okay, this is going to work out in the end. But in that time, there's been a significant amount of caution in the way that we've spent and saved money. The government stimulus checks haven't hurt either, by the way, and so some of that is going into savings also.
So given everything that's going on right now and some vaccines to lockdowns in different part of the world, you briefly mentioned that, from the group that you're surveying, that was 80%+ of people have a trip planned in the next 6 months. So that says to me that there's a good deal of confidence, but where's your assessment in terms of where customer confidence is in terms of related to travel at this very moment?
Yeah, and I think it's important not to overstate it, everything is well by the summer, because there still will be some residual reluctance among some demographics in terms of travel. And I don't think that we should minimize that there has been an economic toll of this recession. But if you look at it relative to what was lost last year, it's going to feel like a really robust recovery. The areas that are going to be slow to recover and where I think we've got to be very patient are on the corporate and the group side. And that's where a number of factors continue to weigh on the recovery. Those would be corporate policies. Right now, corporations are still not, largely allowing travel without, significant restrictions. Meeting planners are still, there are a lot of events that are on the books that are going to get canceled this year. I think there's some hopefulness for some of these meetings to happen that in the end won't, or the ones that do happen are going to happen as hybrids and so be less. Fewer people in hotel rooms as a result. But on the leisure side, I spoke to the financial driver of pent-up demand. I don't think we should discount the psychological factor of pent-up demand, and that is that we've all sacrificed, most of us, to some degree, a certain amount of freedom to travel that we have grown accustomed to over the past year. And so I think that in itself, there's a sense of you know, something akin to what you know, has been translated in from Chinese as revenge travel, which is a fantastic category, but this sense that what was taken away, we're going to get back. I like the feeling of, okay, we're on the revenge tour of getting travel back. And so I think that's also a powerful part of the sentiment. The things that we didn't do, we want to be able to do all the more.
That's a great phrase, and one I'm going to steal and try to integrate into everyday life. So knowing that there is this thirst for revenge travel, and you know, you've seen China open up first, and there's some other trends out there with countries that are opening up their borders quicker than others. Can you just talk a little about like what domestic travel and then international travel is going to look like for a U.S. citizen? Like, where could we go? What are popular destinations you're seeing folks go to? Just how does that whole world come back together? Given borders are starting to unlock, and what would drive it?
International travel is going to be, of course, slower to return. One of the things that we've recognized for our clients over the past year is that those destinations, those properties that are most exposed to international, while they're losing a significant number of guests from international markets, they have the opportunity to convert U.S. residents who are not traveling abroad, but instead traveling domestically. And there's interesting math behind that, because in 2019, there were 19 million more outbound trips by U.S. residents than there were inbound trips by international visitors. And so net, if everybody stops traveling internationally for a while, which is exactly what's happened, the U.S. actually stands to be up on a trip volume basis. As we begin to open up, we're going to, you know, we expect the Canadian border, U.S. Canadian border to open sometime this summer, probably mid to late summer is where I would place my bet. And we'll see, you know, a significant amount of flows there. The U.S. has a surplus in that regard, and that more Canadians travel to U.S. than U.S. residents travel to Canada. So the U.S. would be the primary beneficiary of that, but Canada is the U.S. is the number one visitor market for Canada, so Canada desperately wants that border to open up. Now, we're seeing pickup in travel to the Caribbean as well, so signs of life there. I think it's likely we'll see transatlantic travel come back slower. And so that's almost it actually is a global phenomenon. If you think about, all right, domestic markets being the first round of recovery, the second round is intra-regional, so within Europe, within Asia, within the Americas. And then the third round will be that long-haul travel, inter-regional travel. That last round, if you think about the first round, we've already begun to experience that domestic travel. The second round, intra-regional, is what we'll begin to experience in the second half of this year. And then long-haul, inter-regional, I'm not going to see real traction on that probably until 2022.
When you look at the U.S. market, go back to our dialogue from before about like domestic drive, all that type of stuff, the rebirth of flight, reevaluation of it and making those decisions. Are there any markets in the U.S. that you could just call out that like have bounced back super well, just with specific names or areas of the country, just so people can wrap their heads around? What are some spots that, you know, seemingly are a little bit more normal right now?
Yeah, so Florida looks a whole lot like normal right now. Let's see, South Dakota looks a whole lot like normal. The Outer Banks in North Carolina, some of the resort areas in California had a really good summer last year. Of course, they're more affected by different levels of lockdown, but they've managed to well outperform the major urban markets in California. In Texas, even some of the major cities have had good turnarounds. I mean, San Antonio has had a huge turnaround over the last couple of months. So those are the ones that come to mind, and you know. But then our clients that are in the major cities are, you know, they're just hanging on. You know, for those markets, it really is about surviving. But But I think this summer is where we see the urban markets begin to fill out and, be on their way, at least, to getting back to normal.
Do you see for an urban market any sort of, longer standing restrictions than others? And I'm sure it might be a simple question, right? Of like, if you're going to a more densely populated area that's had higher infection rates and you can't get away from as much people. Do you think that's something where we're going to see continue to spread into next year, or is there optimism that you could kind of see stuff slacking in those big markets in the summer?
I suppose ultimately that's an epidemiological question, right? Where are we as far as COVID as we move into next year? And I probably wouldn't hazard a detailed guess on that. But if we can get to, let's say, between 60 and 70% of the U.S. adult population vaccinated, I think that we've moved, while we'd still be living with COVID and likely will be for some foreseeable period of time, that we go back to life as usual. There's a certain amount of risk that we can then assume and be willing to take that on and live life as usual. Do I think it's outrageous to think that in New York City, people could be at Broadway without masks next year? I don't think that's outrageous.
Okay, so I'm gonna ask you to get your crystal ball out now and make a prediction. So if I gave you the opportunity to come back on this podcast in 12 months from today, so in March 2022, what would be your sort of executive summary of where we're at in life or in the travel industry? Let's summarize that down a little bit.
Let me unapologetically reveal my optimistic bias in my remarks. Wow, I'm glad that's over. Would be what I hope I would be able to say. Would I be able to say it that definitively? Probably not. But I'm cautiously optimistic that at this time next year, and it's likely that there are going to be advances on the treatment side as well. There's just a ton of scientific work going on right now. But between that and the ramping up of vaccinations, especially those that are lower cost, easier to transport. 1 year from now, if you think about how much progress we've made in 1 year from a completely new disease to where we are now in a position we're in the process of if all goes well, getting through it, I would think a year from now we're in, full on rebuild mode and excited about the prospects for our industry.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for coming on and sort of sharing your expertise and your knowledge with us, Adam. We'll make sure that we pop the link to Tourism Economics in the show notes. So if anyone wants to learn more about the work that you do, head over there, and we'll also put your LinkedIn profile as well. And I know that you've posted some things on there recently, and people can learn a lot of stuff by just keeping an eye out to what you're saying. So again, thank you so much for coming on, Adam.
It's a pleasure. And if you do have me on in a year, we can look back and ridicule some of the predictions that I made. Hopefully not, but that's a risk we take.
My hope for a year's time is that we'll all be able to be sat in a room in space of less than 6 foot and be able to record this not over the computer. That's my hope anyway.
Yeah, over a pint indeed.
Indeed, absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Adam. Really appreciate it.
Thanks to you both.
So we really hope that you enjoyed that conversation with Adam. As we look back, we wanted to take the opportunity to reflect a little bit on what he had to say and give our own perspective on things. So as we think back to the conversation, Mike, what really struck out to you?
One that I'm really excited about is the whole conversation about domestic travel, leisure connection, and then what markets begin to rebound when. So we spent a little bit of time talking about New York at the end, how vaccine rollout has been very strong there, how there's a degree of herd immunity that's been built in because they already got hit so hard early on, and how some place like New York could end up being one of the safest places to vacation in or take a drive to, right? We all know there's this trend emerging of the vaccination, right? I probably said that wrong, but the idea of vaccinated people, maybe with or without passports, who knows, will begin to travel. And the idea of seeing something like a Broadway show plays itself so well into this idea of, you know, drive markets, leisure destinations, and all that. And I've got to believe too, because it's something you clearly are excited about, is that stat about household savings is just staggering. I've got to believe people have some savings lined up for those Broadway shows. So what about you? What struck you?
Yeah, I think that the savings stat of $1.7 trillion in household savings across the US and only growing, like, it literally blew my mind when I saw that the first time and then also the second time, because you often think about unemployment numbers and just general costs around, you know, the pandemic and all of those good things which have happened across the world, and also bad things that have happened across the world. It's impacted people in lots of different ways. And when you mentioned that there was a hoard of cash there for people ready to spend when they feel confident, you can understand it. I mean, you mentioned the Broadway shows. I have a friend, he lives in New Jersey, but obviously works in New York, and he went to a concert for the first time last night. And I
jealous.
Yeah, I mean, I was very jealous, first of all, but I was talking to him about it, and he's like, it was the most wonderful experience in the world. And that's where I think now you're only, that was the first time I'd seen somebody go to a concert since last March, but I think you're only going to see more of it, to be honest.
And that brings up a good point too, because I mean, I've been following this because I have three stadium concert tickets that, like, I don't know what's going to go on with them, right? And I saw one leg of the Guns N' Roses tour that I'm supposed to see. Leg one got rescheduled. It's like, okay, so you can probably see like legs two and three will do the same. But then if you look at places in like Texas and Middle America, club shows seemingly are back, right? And it's like, if there's a high degree of distancing, some degree of checking at the door, it seems like you're probably gonna have a rebound of those smaller type, more intimate gigs where you can control and do some tracking around it, versus like, I don't know, the next time we're gonna have a packed stadium show. I don't.
No, I think if you relate that to travel though, and obviously the business that we're in, I was looking yesterday to go to an event, and there's, if you look in the DC market, clearly I'm not gonna stay in a hotel in DC, having just lived outside, but there isn't really any, like, the it's very restricted in terms of what you can actually do. You can go to New York tomorrow and book a ticket to go and watch the Mets play, or go and watch a concert, or go and watch the Red Bulls play, or whatever it might be. And slowly but surely people are gonna start doing it. Last week I was on vacation. You wouldn't know that the world has just gone through what it's gone through. Where we went, it was vastly different this time last year, let's put it that way. And I think that was reflected in what he was saying about travel confidence, which is another point that I wanted to touch on. Yep. He mentioned that 55% of people now say that they feel safe leaving their community, and that number, I am confident, will just continue to grow and grow as, again, more vaccines are distributed, the number of cases withdraws, and people see other people doing it. So again, you go back to my friend that went to a concert yesterday, you telling me the first thing I did was look at the venue that he went and was like, well, if they're doing it, then maybe it's okay. And, you know, you start kind of that kind of social envy, I guess, is probably one way to put it.
I agree. Yeah, there's a couple of stand-up comedians I follow on Instagram. It's like they're starting to do like shows and clubs again. It's this kind of this cool series, like New York, like the most popular comedy club or legendary ones was called like the Comedy Cellar. Like, they've reopened for the first time in years, and it's like, that's exciting to see. It's like, to your point, like, get a little pressure down here and see if you're doing it safely up in New York, start it up here.
Yeah. The other stat that really struck out to me was the household income level. So he related it to, you know, households earning over $100,000 account for about 24% of the households in the US, but almost 60% of leisure spending on lodging, which was, again, a big disparity, but you can understand it. People with a higher disposable income are more likely to travel. But the way that he related it to those people earning even more, over $150,000 in household income, potentially the luxury space in those resort-led spaces are going to see a quicker return to travel, because those people that are earning that amount have the disposable income, firstly. And then secondly, they're probably in that category of their savings have maybe stayed equal or grown over the last 12 months. So I thought that was also interesting too.
Agree. Yeah, it seems like the luxury is a quick one to rebound. I mean, we've seen those stats that those that were able to kind of stay steady through this, and you know, investments were up, down, and then if you rode that trend, it might even be better. You know, I'm just so curious about what take of someone who, you know, maybe got a stimulus checked in, and like how far travel stacks up on their stuff, right? Did that money go into a war chest, or was it ready to get turned into a vaccination or something similar? So I think I'll be excited to watch. And I want to thank you for organizing it. And I think he was a fantastic guest and a really enlightened speaker. So thank you, Chris.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks again for listening. We're so grateful that you joined this journey with us and listened to today's conversation with Adam. You can get in touch with the show on Twitter at @MDS_decoded, or you can also email us at MDS@Marriott.com. If you liked today's conversation and you can spare a few minutes to share a review, especially on iTunes, that would be fantastic. It really does help people find us and ensure that we're sharing this knowledge with more and more people, and more people can hear conversations like we've had with Adam today. The next episode will be released in just over 2 weeks, and we've got a really fantastic show planned with a social media giant, and we're going to talk all about how social is inspiring travel and things that any business can do to inspire customers through their platform. You can also enjoy this podcast on any good podcasting app, and you can learn more about digital marketing at mdsdecoded.com. Thanks for listening.